On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Welcome to the Ron Van Dam Show. Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
I've got a very important announcement.
Whatever.
Good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show. Oh, I didn't say good morning, and good morning, too. And good afternoon, and good night, and good evening. And good morning, and good afternoon. And good night, and good evening. Oh, yeah, baby. Welcome to the program. My name is indeed Ron Van Dam. That's part of what I'm saying to you. The other part is going to go on for quite a length of time. This show today will be 17 hours long with an intermission after the 14th hour. Are you ready? Here we go. I'm going to read from the dictionary. No, I'm not. I'm not going to read from the dictionary. That would be stupid. Aardvark. No, stop it. Stop it right now. Hey, before we go any further, and we probably shouldn't anyway, ladies and gentlemen, how can your day progress? Seriously, how can your day progress without finding out exactly what's going to be happening to you? How did I have that into you? According to your astrological sign, skip Star Chaser.
Greetings, fellow planet travelers. Kip Starchild here with your monthly New England Broadcasting Horoscopescape. Let's see what the stars have planned for you. Aquarius, your life lately is the result of a lot of really questionable choices. I don't see that changing anytime soon, but I do see a lot of Mexican prison food. Pisces, watch out for your evil twin. Not the one you already killed, the one you weren't aware of. Aries, in your endless search for meaning, remember to check between the couch cushions. Taurus, you've got a career change coming. You probably weren't thinking about it and didn't know about it, but your bosses and coworkers certainly have. Remember, friolators get really hot. Gemini, bad sushi means a good lawsuit. Mazel tov! Cancer, chances are pretty good that you are going to get hit by a bus or a derailed train. Leo, don't stand too close to Cancer. Libra, romance is in the air for you. So is a raging STD, thanks to Miss or Mr. Right. Or both. Virgo, start saving now for your dream vacation. Looks like the money will go to bailing out your quote-unquote Uncle Freddy again, but it's best to plan ahead. Sagittarius, exposure to a leaky microwave at a chemical plant will give you superpowers. Or some kind of really bad tumor, not exactly sure which one right now. Sorry. Capricorn, you are about to make two new best friends. Tequila and despair. So stock up on limes and Kleenex. That's your New England Broadcasting Horoscopescape. I'm Kip Starchild. Until next time, peace.
Thank you, Kip. Well, you know, I was thinking about Bruce Jenner last night. I was sleeping, woke up in a puddle. Cut it out, that's just a joke. And I was wondering, what right now is Bruce, I mean Caitlin, I mean Beelzebub, what is he, she, it, they, them, I don't know, the, what are they wearing?
What are you wearing? What are you wearing? What are you wearing today, today? What are you wearing? What are you wearing? What are you wearing today, today?
This might be a little more difficult for most if you're transsexual. I mean, not only do you have to get up and wonder if you're going to be wearing long pants or shorts, long sleeve or short sleeve, but you also have to go a step further and say, am I going to be a man or a woman today? Now, I believe that Caitlin Beelzebub, have already committed themselves, herself, himself, themselves, all of themselves, to being a woman. So I will refer to her now as Caitlin at this time, from this point forward, out of respect for the Pope, out of respect for Bruce. I mean Caitlin, I mean Beelzebub. I'm so confused. But, I mean, how do you get up in the... Do you wear underpants to bed or panties? I don't know, Bruce. I mean Caitlin. I don't know where you're at for that. You know, if you're sleeping by yourself, do you put a pair of jockeys on or do you put a little flowered panty on? I really don't know. And we're assuming that I care. Let's start from the assumption, from the base, that I would possibly care about him. I respect transsexuals. I respect every kind of embodiment of your body possible, unless you shove it in my face, which Caitlin Bruce has done. I didn't ask you to go out and do a front cover on Vanity Fair. That would be on my face, I said by mistake. Probably because if I pass by a newsstand, there is the decathlon winner in a dress with makeup on. So, I mean, that freaks me out just a tad. Not enough to ruin my day, but enough to say to myself, well, I live in a big world, don't I? So I don't get it, and I don't have to get it. Here's my problem with this whole thing. And listen to me carefully, please. Put your ear a little closer to the speaker, unless you're driving in the car. That could be dangerous. Don't do anything dangerous, ever. Because if you do something dangerous, you're affecting me when I'm on the road, and then you're dangerous. I become dangerous because you're dangerous. So let's not go there. I don't need a dangerous hearing because you putting your ear to the speaker. I didn't tell you to do that. You can't sue me for it. I was only kidding. Anyway, here's the deal with this. Caitlin becomes a girl, and Bruce becomes a girl, a woman. And what's the first thing he does, ladies and gentlemen? What's the first thing he does? He splashes himself as a model on the cover of Vanity Fair, which is a girly magazine where models are. What was in this human being's mind to figure, okay, because now I'm going to become a woman. Fine, wonderful, enjoy. To me, someone saying now I want to become a woman is like saying now I want to go get a creamsicle. It's fine. You made a choice. Go do it. I don't give a shit. Here's the problem, though. Here's the problem. First problem is, as I said, I don't give a shit. Now this can't be aired in its entirety on regular broadcast radio for syndication. So I kind of screwed that up. And I apologize. You had to bleep once. What I'm saying is, Bruce is a sexist pig. And here's why I say this. He falls directly into the chasm of sexism. Just because you become a woman, Bruce, doesn't mean that you're automatically a sexed-out sexpot model. Your interpretation of a female is askew. I'm not even a female, and I personally take offense to it. Because you're a woman doesn't mean that you must be concerned now about being splashed on the front page of Vanity Fair. Becoming a woman is simply going out and doing woman things, perhaps dressing like a woman, yes, looking like a woman, feeling like a woman, entertaining yourself with other women. It doesn't mean you almost automatically become sexist. A female is not an object on the cover of a magazine, Bruce. A female is a person, a human being, of a different sexual feeling, want, and need, perhaps. Simply, a female is a person that has a vagina and is built a little bit differently than a man. They both have the same powers. They have the both same superhuman powers. Man can't give birth. Woman can. Okay, that's the physical thing. But a woman automatically does not become eligible to be on the front page of a model magazine, Bruce. And who told you when you became a woman, Bruce, that you are the most beautiful woman ever alive and you belong on the cover of Vanity Fair magazine? Because, Bruce, Caitlin, Balzabub, you are just totally beautiful. And the world must share in your great exotic beauty. What the hell's going on here, man? And if Bruce wants to quietly transition into a woman, he has made the wrong choice of quietly transition. Bruce, look this up. Google this. Type in quietly transitioning, and you will not see your picture anywhere close to that. Because what you've done is you've chosen to smash your face into the limelight. And when you choose to do that, you allow me and other people who comment on things to say what they wish. Because you didn't quietly transition into anything. You didn't want to be left alone. You didn't want the spotlight off of you. You wanted it shined on you. So I don't respect you, Bruce. I didn't respect you when you won the decathlon in the Olympics. I thought, okay, you're showing your physical prowess. That's really nice. But now I think so much less of you, not because you're a transsexual, but because you are a sexist pig within your own pig rights. Do you understand what I'm saying? And that's what he's wearing.
What are you wearing? What are you wearing? What are you wearing today, today?
What unbelievable. Are you unbelievable,
what
this guy,
wearing,
this woman.
What are you wearing today, today?
A woman, by definition, automatically puts on a slinky dress, tons of makeup, a wig, and sits on the cover of one of the largest modeling magazines. That's what being a woman is to Bruce Jenner. So I think that's a little bit cheesy. I think it's cheesy. There's a lot of cheese involved in that. It's there's so much cheese in that statement and in that action that you'll be constipated for weeks.
You're listening to The Big Show with Ron Van Dam. I wish I could listen to it too, but sometimes he says bad words.
It is a pity. He was my favorite Beatle. the most talented? I don't know. They were all talented. But no ego. No ego. Paul, big ego. John, through the roof ego. Ringo, gigantic ego. George Harrison, just a damn nice, talented guy. Isn't that an incredible, incredible life? His life was taken early, medically, actually, but could be a result of a gunshot wound at his break-in at his home there. It could have been a medical result, but left us way too early. But at the same time, man, this journey we call life, here's a guy that actually affected, like, almost everybody. Everybody knew who he was, his contributions, his demeanor, and isn't that, like, the fullest life you can possibly have as far as value to the world is concerned? I mean, he didn't cure cancer. He didn't invent the airplane. His contribution was music and musical respect and notoriety. And I think it's great. I mean, when we go, you and me, what do we leave behind? Car parts? But in the long run, ladies and gentlemen, the value of one's life is not how many people you affect, how popular you were, how well known you were. It's were you happy? Were you good to others? Was somebody on this planet enriched because of your existence? That's it. Things we struggle. Oh, let's wait for the music to go in a little bit. Okay, fine. One of the things we all struggle with in life are our own addictions. I don't really know of anybody who isn't addicted to something, and the addictions are not necessarily heroin. Addictions would be any great focus on something that you find it difficult not to engage yourself or indulge yourself in on a regular basis. What is excessive? That's up to you. I would assume when it impedes on your health and your judgment and your personality, that impedance would be a negative thing, but you're stuck there. That's an addiction. And we're all familiar with addictions to drugs, addictions to alcohol, addictions to smoking, and we know of addictions to food, but we accept it a little bit more because food's a tasty thing, and we all eat food. Everybody on the planet eats food, except for the people that can't afford to, and please help them out with your contributions. But we all eat food. So that's what makes food so interestingly a different category of addiction. We all indulge in it. The question is, do we indulge in it too much? I mean, some people don't drink alcohol. A lot of people never did drugs. A lot of people never smoked. But everybody eats food. So it's kind of almost like in your face no matter what you do. You can't say, no, I'm addicted to eating too much food and I'm just going to stop eating completely. I don't want any food near me ever again. You can't do that. It's not an option. So food addiction is rough. We found two people who actually do a support group nationwide with a great foundation. And they're very engaging people, and I was very impressed by them. We talked to them yesterday and for airing today, and we're going to air it right now. We're going to talk about food addiction, which is, and you better listen because you know that you're probably in on this. We're talking about food addicts in recovery, which is Food Addicts in Recovery Anonymous is actually the organization. Zoe and Sharon join us. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Pleasure to have you here. Now, we're talking about a subject that I think everybody kind of connects with, or at least most people do. What is a food addict?
A food addict is a person who suffers from the disease of addiction, mm-hmm. Where their primary substance is, in fact, food.
Okay.
It's no different than being an alcoholic or a crack addict or a gambler, a gambling addict or a smoker. It's being addicted to. Okay. To food. It means being unable to stop eating addictively.
Okay.
Being unable to stop eating right. When you really want to. Having a uh-huh. relationship with food mm-hmm. instead of just a normal exchange with food where food goes in and out.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. That's most of us, I think, but what you're saying is this goes beyond what most people's love of food, the enjoyment of eating, the continuing of going for a second or third portion. We're talking about where a situation where you cannot stop from putting food in your mouth.
Right. Yeah. So food addiction for me has been is often for myself and defined in general as a physical, mental, and spiritual disease.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, physically, it can come in different forms. For myself, I was quite overweight. Mm-hmm. Mentally, it's about having an obsession mm-hmm. with the food, you know, mm-hmm. just often thinking about it and not being able to put it down. And then,
right.
You know, feeling really just spiritually devoid and bankrupt in one's life, you know, having a lot of unmanageability in one's life because of my relationship with food.
Let me ask you both, Zoe and Sharon, do you feel that you had an addictive personality in the sense that there were you both smokers or drinkers, or is it, I mean, do they follow suit?
So that's true of many people in our recovery group. Mm-hmm. I myself was addicted to smoking.
Mm-hmm.
I do have an addictive personality.
Right.
I mean, I can kind of get addicted to anything, like over-focus on
yeah.
anything.
Yeah.
And what it is a way for me to avoid fears and doubts and insecurities. It's a way of padding down those emotional feelings that
yeah.
That scare me, that get out of hand for
right.
me. And so, I mean, it's funny because the first thing I could do as a child, you know, was eat, and you're rewarded by eating, and it's so it's kind of a reinforcing thing.
Sure.
As I got older, you know, I found other substances that would also sort of push down those really uncomfortable feelings.
Yeah.
And I did put down cigarettes, and you know, alcohol happened not to be one of my
uh-huh.
abuses, but surely could have.
Sure.
And that's certainly true of many people in this organization.
I can imagine. And it's dangerous. Obviously, any addiction is dangerous, but there are many physical problems that result from overeating, quite obviously. And I guess.
Right. Well, some substances will get you quick. I mean, heroin has not, that's not a very forgiving sort of substance.
Yeah.
Food, tricks you for a long, long time.
Yeah.
I mean, your body can absorb an awful lot of food. In my case, though, I was absolutely killing myself one forkful at a time. I mean, there was no question it was slow suicide. And it got to a point where it wasn't so slow. My diabetes was completely out of control.
Yeah.
I gave myself 5 insulin shots a day to try to manage it.
Yeah.
There were many, many other medical problems, and it just became abundantly clear that I was abusing the food.
Yeah.
And yet I wasn't even, I was not thin by any stretch. But I was not, morbidly, the kind of television show morbidly obese type of person. I was, 5'4" and 230 pounds, and that's not that uncommon. But what it did to my body was absolutely brutal. I couldn't keep that on.
I guess I've got to ask the both of you how you were able to, I'm sure you recognized it, but you didn't do much about it, but how you were able to actually move on with this and get away from it. I suppose a lot of it has to do with support.
Mm-hmm. I feel like a gift was given to me. My addiction started very young. I was 8 years old the first time that I went to a commercial diet program.
Mm-hmm.
And I battled the bulge for the next 15 years before a friend introduced me to a 12-step program. And coming into FA, it was as if, vistas opened up to find out that, wow, all these years I thought I had no willpower. I thought I was just, destined to be fat. I'm 5 feet tall. I'm 5 feet short. Everyone in my family is short. And so I thought it was in the genes. Yeah. I thought my metabolism was slow. So I came into, the halls of a 12-step meeting and found out, actually the issue is that you have a disease, and your disease is called food addiction, and your addiction, it has treatment. The reason that you've been fighting this all these years is that you haven't found the right treatment yet.
Mm-hmm.
We have a treatment here for you. Let us help you.
Right.
And that opened up my eyes very widely, and I heard a person from the front of the room. She stood up and said, 15 years ago, I was 90 pounds overweight.
Yeah.
It took a year for that weight to come off, and now I'm thin. And she's, and she was standing there in a right-sized body, and I thought, 15 years she's had that weight off her body? I want that. I want that. And it's been given to me. I've been within 2 pounds of the same weight for almost 19 years.
Uh-huh.
That's unheard of. My top weight was 203 pounds.
Right.
I've weighed up about 105, 106 pounds for almost 19 years.
I see.
It's unheard of except in this program, where our stories are not even sort of remarkable. That's another one of those remarkable things, is that people that recognize that it's a disease and are truly wanting help for that disease and find it there and are really, willing to be willing, are kind of desperate for it.
Yeah.
And you'll see that, we just had a wonderful convention. There are food addicts all over the world, and, some 5,000 of us and 500 of us got together, and it was remarkable. You're walking into a room where everybody's story is miraculous like that, and it is a support group. But it's also the whole program gives me the freedom not to hurt myself anymore, not to hurt myself with bad words to myself, not to hurt myself with food, not to hurt myself with anything. It gives me freedom, unlike I've ever had.
It gave me a chance to, coming into this program was the difference. What made the difference is that it taught me how to be honest with myself. So I, just like any other normal, red-blooded American, and now internationally too, but, I wanted to make excuses for myself.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to have to be accountable for why I was fat and depressed. I didn't want to have the have to, I didn't want me to have to be the reason behind that. And I'm really getting honest with myself that, well, you know, I'm a drug addict with food.
Mm-hmm.
And particularly, you know, flour and sugar and quantities were killing me.
Yeah. And all the diseases that follow, which is what you're referring to, I assume. In the Boston area, you did have a session this past weekend, and I know it's always the support's always available. How do people, and I know there's a lot of people listening to this who say, yeah, I don't like to admit it, but yeah, that's me in some form. What do they do? Where do they go?
Sure. Well, right. Greater Boston is a wonderful place to be if you have any link to this disease. We have, my understanding is that this broadcast in, well, most centrally in the local Brockton area.
No, actually, well, we yes, that's where our studios are. We're all over New England, though, but yeah.
Okay, so the best place to go is to our website, www.foodaddicts.org, where you can click on the buttons to find a meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And finding a meeting is going to be your best route of learning about FA. Go to a meeting where you can see and talk with other food addicts in recovery. Mm-hmm. They're all over Greater Boston, all over Greater New England, all over... we're in 36 states and 8 countries, so there's no shortage of meetings around. And starting on the website is the best place to go.
Wow. Okay. Thank you so much for your time this morning. And it's very important. Let me ask you both just very, very quickly. You got the support. Did you replace the food addiction with something else that was healthier or more positive health-wise? Or was it like a cold turkey kind of deal?
Well, I mean, in short, I kind of replaced the bad behavior with good supportive behavior in the form of my fellowship. I mean, but it's not unusual as an addict to go from one substance to another substance, and we're well aware of that. So you have a sponsor, you have support systems, you go to meetings, you pick up the phone. You know, there's a whole lot of positive activities that we do to replace the negative activities that we had been doing. And we also have this wonderful way of working together. You know, the root cause of the problems are something like fears, doubts, and insecurities. And we have wonderful ways of working with one another to reduce those anxieties caused by those, you know, very natural thoughts. Some are born with more of them and some are born with less of them. And, so we do have a lot of positive reinforcements to help, remove the negative things that we were doing to ourselves and replace them with positive things.
Well, that's the wonderful thing about negative things is that when you get rid of negative things, your world opens up and it becomes like you're in heaven all of a sudden and everything's positive and everything, you feel better, you're healthier. So there are ramifications to getting rid of the negative, so it doesn't leave an empty space. It actually leaves good stuff in place of it.
Sure does. Yeah. It really does. And the people that I've met in this program are really unlike most people. You know, they are trying to get at us. They're trying to become aware. They say what they mean, and they mean what they say, and usually they're not so mean when they say it, you know.
Right.
It's a good support system in all kinds of ways.
And one more time, the website.
www.foodaddicts.org.
Perfect. Thank you so much for your time this morning. Pleasure meeting the both of you.
Thank you. Thank you.
You take care. Bye-bye. Nice people, huh? Nice people. Zoe and Sharon. I think I'm a food addict. I really do. I mean, not that I eat food in my attic, I'm a food addict in the sense that if I'm eating spaghetti, and I just love spaghetti because it's a fun food, tastes good, not good for you because pasta just goes nowhere, just puts fat on you. I can never just have a plate of spaghetti. I will need to go back into the kitchen and get more spaghetti. And after I've eaten that extra little portion of spaghetti, I'll go back in the kitchen and get some more spaghetti. And then I sit back and I go, that was really good. Maybe I should go back in the kitchen and get some more spaghetti. Before you know it, I'm writhing in pain. Diarrhea, gas, you name it, I got it. All because I had to make that many more trips for more spaghetti. And it's not just spaghetti, it's I have a little dish of ice cream. That was very tasty, and now the ice cream's gone. I think I'll get a little bit more ice cream. Got myself a little bowl of potato chips here. That was good. Kind of want some more potato chips. Why should I deprive myself? You only live once. I'm gonna go back in the kitchen and get some more potato chips. And I think that's what a food addict is. You just can't stop. You just keep going, because, and then you make the excuse, well, I only live once. I mean, why should I deprive myself? That's why people have difficulty on diets, the whole bit. So it's a problem. And contact these people and, you know, their foundation and their support group, because bad stuff happens. The diabetes and the sugars, and you shorten your life and you have it in. It's awful. It's just awful. I think a lot of people have addictive personalities, and when you do, I think, you know, if you have an addictive personality or not, you may not be addicted to everything. Like, there's some stuff you don't do ever, you never would, but other stuff, it's addictive, yeah.
One man, one microphone, 1 hour, so many random thoughts. You are listening to The Ron Van Dam Show.
As I've said so many times on this program, I don't believe that a single human being such as myself or yourself should ever figure that they would completely understand everything and everybody. And when you're young, you feel like, yes, I am that omniscient. I understand everybody. I understand everything everybody does. I don't agree with them. I don't know them myself, but I understand them. And then you get older and you just don't put up with the crap anymore, and then you admit that you really don't understand them. And there's one group of people, there's many groups of people that I don't understand, including myself, actually. But there's one group that I totally don't get, and they're harmless people, but it makes me feel like I've lost that loving feeling. Have you ever been to the opera before? A lot of people are into opera. I totally, totally don't understand that obsession. And I tend to think that people that like opera must like opera for a different reason than it's opera. Because it's sung in different languages, you can't follow it. And if you go, movie theaters actually now air entire operas, and they have the subtitles to what the hell they're singing, but it's just, well, I might as well just read a book. Why am I reading subtitles on a movie screen? That is always bothersome to me. And what they are singing about still doesn't engage me. Even if I understand what they're singing about, it still doesn't engage me. There's no tune. There's no melody. It's just random people singing their guts out, you know? And I don't understand it. The storylines are pathetically boring and if you can even call them storylines. Scenery doesn't change all that much. It's impressive when you first see it, but then you're looking at it for a long time. Operas tend to run about 3 to 4 hours long. That's not entertaining. That's torture. I don't care what it is. I wouldn't go to a concert for 4 hours of my favorite group. I would tend to start to find them quite boring and nauseating after a certain amount of time. I could never sit in a movie theater for 4 hours, ever, watching the same movie, like not even resolve itself in 2 hours. I believe that the only reason or the major reason a lot of people go to the opera is because they can say to themselves and to other people, I went to the opera. It's a class thing. It puts you into the sophistication category where you actually, even if you don't tell somebody you went to the opera, you feel good about yourself. I've done something that society considers to be cultural. And I actually made it through. I actually existed through it. I got to the other side of it. That's an accomplishment. But then there are some people that will actually, like, when they're home, they will take a CD of an opera and they'll listen to it in their house. And I'm saying to myself, you people are off of my charts. I don't understand you. Again, harmless people. They're not murdering or looting or anything. They're harmless. They're not trying to convert me into Catholicism or Christianity or Scientology. Nothing like that. They're not Jehovah's Witnesses. They are perfectly fine people. It's just that their tastes in entertainment have me baffled. And it's only because I can't stomach opera. There's nothing about it that I understand. And when you get into the category of things happening with great love and passion that you can't understand, you feel a little bit like, oh, it's more like, it's what I started out by saying. You really start to understand that you don't understand, that there are things that you just don't get. I mean, I don't get country music. I find it very boring. I do listen to it sometimes if I'm trapped into it. It's not so bad. There are melodies. You can walk away humming the song sometimes. They are all the same subject matter, as every song really is. I'm just not into country, but I appreciate it. I'm not into rap. I've heard some rap songs that I don't mind. Most of it I don't care for, but I understand people liking it to some extent. Opera to me is off the charts, man. I think it's for people that are insomniacs, who don't sleep at night, and they really need to get some sleep before they go crazy and their nervous system breaks down. So they go to the opera, they sit there, they fall asleep, and they get a good 2 hours, 3 hours, maybe 4 hours of a good sound sleep because the opera is that boring. I understand that for medical purposes. The only thing I appreciate about opera is that the singing quality is quite extraordinary. To take the human voice and to hit these different levels and pitches and intensities is quite extraordinary. It makes normal singers like Frank Sinatra look like total crap. And believe me, in the long run, he really is. Most of your rock stars and say, oh, what a wonderful voice on Steven Tyler, Aerosmith. No, it's not a wonderful voice. If you listen to opera, that's an amazing voice. Those are the sounds of angels and the power of the audio of the vocal cords. Opera is the primary source for that display. I get that, but not for 4 hours. And give me a storyline that works. There are some operas which are popular. And every once in a while, I'll hear a little popular, I don't sing opera, by the way. Is that obvious to you at any point? I know that. A Figaro, I get that. But I don't want to sit there for 4 hours just to listen to that little 3-minute piece. So that's it. I do this all in the context of it's not important for us to understand everything. Some people and some exercises and forms of entertainment and attitudes are totally foreign to us. We would never engage in them. We would puke if we did, or have some type of anxiety fit. But that doesn't mean that it's not okay for somebody else, as long as it doesn't do harm. And I suppose opera doesn't do any harm to most people. To me, it would do great harm, but not to others. And that's what makes me and you wonderful people, because we tolerate. We tolerate. We say, okay, the world doesn't revolve around us. It revolves around other people too. And that's how we become, that's how we know it's the end of the show, when we start bringing up subjects like this that really don't make any difference. Look, thank you for spending the time with me today. Let's do it again tomorrow? Well, yeah, okay. Sure, why not? I do wish you peace.